I want to calm the fears of everybody off the top here, Jeffy.
Of what?
I have been told that the great top 100 players of all time controversy may in fact not be a controversy. Let me explain.
What's the controversy? I don't even understand this.
There have been some reports from friends in our Sportsnet family, Elliot Friedman and Nick Kyprios, that would seem to indicate that only six modern players will be on the top 100 list, when in fact the indication is that it will only be maybe six players from the all-star teams that will be on the top 100 list, and that players that are not there at the all-star game, like Jerome McGinley, Joe Thornton, for example, will in fact be on the list, or at least in contention for the list. So while we all were wigging out over the idea that Patrick Kane might be on a list that Jerome McGinley wouldn't be on, mayhaps they'll both be on when the dust settles.
Yep. I don't know. I'm so weird about these things. You know what I'm like. Yeah. I mean, everyone's is... I mean, you're not going to number them, right?
No, they're not.
There's no 100 to 1 and the big reveal. There's not. But I'm sure that your list would be different than my list. It would be different than the NHL's list and different from the Sportsnet list and the TSN list and the whatever list. So I take all of it with a grain of salt. You know, look, man, Nuzi Lalonde played 100 games. Mind you, they're only playing 20 games a season then, but he's on it.
Right. I think, you know, the big trick, and maybe you can tell me how you feel about it. The big trick is that we haven't had one of these lists in maybe like 15 years. Like, I think the Hockey News put out a top 100 list in like 1998.
Yes, right? I remember. I still have the book. Steve Dryden wrote it. It was a great one. So yeah, the top 100.
Just have it right behind me here somewhere. There it is.
Give me 2 seconds. Let me grab it.
The toughest thing about it, in my eyes, is like, at some point you have to make
Here it is.
You have to make room for the newbies, right? At some point you have to make room for the modern players, which means at some point you have to make really tough decisions about guys that are already on the list. And that's my big question about this list, because it's, you know, it's being put together by like a blue ribbon panel or whatever, and like, who from the 98 list or subsequent lists gets kicked out in favor of modern players, and is it a thing where like you're going position for position, or, you know, placed in the all-time scoring list for placed in the all-time scoring list? I'll be fascinated to see how they do that.
And more so, I mean, the bottom ones are always easier, right? Like, you can, you know, sort of, you know, goof around. You can goof around with, you know, Brad Park, right? You can goof around with players like that.
Like,
you
if Brad Park...
Bill Gadsby and Yvonne Cornwallier.
Yeah, if those guys are out because you had to make room for modern players, I don't think anyone's going to be really upset, although I think Cornwallier should still be on the list.
The key roadrunner, he's fast, man. The interesting thing to me is, and again, it's not being numbered, so what do you do? Elliot Friedman asked this question the other day. I thought it was an interesting one. I'm going to follow up with another one to you. When you look at, you know, the top five players of all time, I would actually extend it to six and put Jean Béliveau in there, but whatever. We've always sort of been on the same page that it's Gretzky, or pick whichever order you want to put them in. Gretzky or Howe, Lemieux, Richard. It's always been the order that we've had them.
Yes.
How close is Crosby to that?
Ah.
That's Elliot's question.
It's a tough call because, you know, obviously we don't know what he ends up with. But
what if his career ended today?
If
he said, you know what, that's it, I'm out.
If Sidney Crosby's career ended today, I think Sid is probably top. Okay, if you're going to include goalies and defensemen. And game plan that out, he's top 20, maybe top 15, but not top 10.
He's not top 10. Yeah, he's top 10 for me.
You think so?
Yeah, he's top 10 for me. Here's my question to ask for you. And this is a question asked to me by Steve Fallon, who's an outstanding researcher with us. If you look at 1967 expansion, right? Since then, we've all, I think safe to say, been in agreement that the three best players have been Wayne Gretzky, Bobby Orr, and Sidney Crosby. Mm-hmm. Can we say that?
Yeah.
Since 67 expansion, who's number four?
Since 67, Wayne Gretzky, Bobby Orr, Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
Wait, who's four? Hold on. You're forgetting Mario.
Oh, sorry. Mario. Sorry, Mario. Said Sid. I meant Mario. Mario.
So you think, so your premise is that Sid would be number four?
I go back and forth whether it's Sid or Nick Lidstrom or Dominic Hasek.
Well, okay, if we're including goalies and defensemen and not just making it a skaters list, which is going to be the real challenge of this list that they're putting out,
mm-hmm.
then it's Hasek. Hasek is the best goaltender in the history of hockey.
Could be.
He is.
Yeah.
And
you'd also have to
you know, sit back and really debate whether it's Sid or Wah too, which is again a tough call.
I'll take
in
Sid.
This apples and oranges world.
I'll take Sid on that one. I'll take Sid in that fight. I'll take Sid in that fight over Patrick Wah.
I would take Sid in any fight because at the end of the day, he's going to try to hit the guy in the balls from behind like he did with that dude from the Thrashers that one time.
Oh, the cowbell move. Oh, yeah.
Honk. Oh, listen to the wheezy sick laugh of my podcasting partner.
I've been sick as a dog, man. Yeah, sorry about that. I apologize for the occasional cough and wheeze. I got a long shift tonight, too.
It's nice that you finally have a voice to match your curmudgeonly historian vibe.
That's right. Let me tell you about Max Bentley. None of these guys could hand Ole a candle to Andy Bathgate.
I've been doing some centennial stuff to kind of prep for everything, and like the toughest thing about it is that you go back to like the guys in the 1920s and 30s, and literally everybody that you read about has been given the label the Wayne Gretzky of his day.
I know.
It's like, how could you all be back. The Wayne Gretzky of your day?
Like, hold on a second here. It's funny because I hosted an event for the NHL a couple of weeks ago. This is before the first 33 were named. This is the day before the Centennial Classic. And so it was a room full of, I guess, I don't know, about 200 people. And it was all these players. You know, Alex Delvecchio was there. Red Kelly was there. Johnny Busick was there. Mark Howe was there from the Howe family. Had a nice conversation with Eddie Shore's grandson, Bob. It was one of the great conversations I've had of all time. And learned great stories about Eddie Shore.
I was going to say, it so great? Just story time?
It was totally story time. And, you know, it's just getting back to I'm getting my point in a second, but just as a quick aside, Bob told me, this is Bob Shore, Eddie's grandson, said, you know, one of the great stories we all know about, you know, King Clancy and, my grandfather had this like long running feud. And so, Clancy and Shore get in a fight one day. Either Clancy gets in a lucky punch or Shore slips or whatever, and he goes to the ice and Clancy hammers him, right? With a punch, you know, almost knocking him out. You know, the referees separate them. Shore gets back up and says to Clancy, "Let's see you try that again." And Clancy goes, "Okay, get back down there." But then afterwards, like, there's a collection of Maple Leafs fans that it was Boston Bruins fans that wanted to kill King Clancy. This is the days when, like, there would be, like, you know, pitchforks and peasants outside the rink if you did something bad to their player, you know, waiting to take care of you. And, you know, Bob said there's a collection of Boston Bruins fans outside the rink wanted to get at Clancy. And guess who jumped up to defend him to fight Boston Bruins fans? Eddie Shore. So, yeah. Like, remarkable. Come on, Clancy. And they just, like, tried to kill each other on the ice. Like, they should both be in prison for the things they did to each other on the ice, you know, 20 minutes ago. Now they're fighting their way through a mob together. It's insane, Greg.
It's beautiful. It's like
hockey.
When Batman and Superman teamed up at the end of their movie and stopped fighting each other.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But the thing that I get from when I talk to a lot of these guys and had a wonderful conversation with Charlie Conacher's son, Pete. And, you know, when I think of Charlie Conacher, you know, I see, like, when you think of Howie Morenz, I mean, you can see elements of Howie Morenz's game in Connor McDavid. You know, that right. type of speed in the hands, like a Pavel Bure as well. When you think mm-hmm. of Charlie Conacher, you see like, okay, Charlie Conacher, one of the first power forwards the game has ever known. Mm-hmm. You know, you see that in Shanahan. You see part of that in Milan Lucic. You see that in the power forwards. So I always find it, I understand why it's done because it's an easy definition to follow. But I'm always shy of taking today's player and projecting him backwards and saying, you know, he's the Wayne Gretzky of the 30s. I understand why they do it, but I'm more, you know, I'm closer to saying, you know, Connor McDavid, you know, he's the Howie Morenz of his time than saying, oh, yeah, Howie Morenz was the Connor McDavid of his time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was
fair.
A fun night, dude. That was a fun night.
I
imagine. But, you know, the thing about doing those, events, too, because he's like the really old guys, right? Mm-hmm. Like, these guys are all like, getting sleepy in their soup around 9:30. Dude, I was home and tucked into bed in my jammies by 11:30 that night. It's great.
All right, listen. We're not going to do our any like full lists here. Maybe we'll do that later in the month. But who's your second defenseman after Bobby Orr?
Nick Lidstrom.
Of all time?
Yep.
So it wouldn't be Eddie Shore. It wouldn't be Doug Harvey.
Nope.
It'd be Lidstrom.
Harvey would be close. Harvey might be my second one, but it would be Nick Lidstrom.
That's interesting. Well, you have the right answer because Lidstrom over Bork all day, all night.
Oh, going away, for sure. For sure. Yeah, Lidstrom. Lidstrom all the way.
But that's the kind of thing I'm fascinated by. Like, that's why I wish these idiots would rank them instead of just, like, kowtowing to the NHLPA and being like...
They don't want
the
headaches.
We have to get rid of the All-Star format because the players are sad that they get picked last. You know, it's like the same principle is why they don't rank these all-timers. But that's the thing that you're dying to see is like, how does the blue ribbon panel that's putting this thing together really feel about Hasek versus Waugh and really feel about Lidstrom versus Bork? That's what you really want to see.
I think it's all under the NHL banner and it is NHL, you know, NHL says Wayne Gretzky's number one, Bobby Orr is number two. So then under the NHL banner, Bobby Orr has that number two beside his name. They don't want the grief. I can understand why they're doing it. I know they don't want the grief.
I am under the operative theory that there's absolutely no way that Wayne Gretzky would have taken this ambassador gig if Gordy couldn't be number one. That's my theory. Like, if they actually had a countdown, I don't think Wayne takes the job if he can't get Gordy number one of all time.
That's interesting.
Yeah, right?
He always maintained he was the best. All think the player, you know, that we loved when we were 12 years old is the best ever.
Yeah. I mean, Gretzky's demonstrably the best player of all time. It's like, it's not really close.
It's not fair.
One more for you.
What's up?
Considering what happened last night for the Washington Capitals, do you put Alex Ovechkin over Jaromir Jagr?
I probably do.
It's a tough one, right?
I probably do. If you look at the, you know, score adjusts for era, he's the greatest goal scorer of all time.
I respect the hell out of what Jagr's done with his game later in life. I respect any player that can modulate. Like Yzerman gets many cookies from me for turning into the player that he wound up being in his 30s. But yeah, Ovechkin's a force of nature. But again, that's the tough part is that like it's all projection. It's the same thing as like I've seen people like mention Carey Price should be on the list. Well, that's great and all, except like Henrik Lundqvist has been a demonstrably better player than Carey Price during his career. It's just that Price right now is the best goalie in the world.
I find the – let me just pause on that Yzerman point because it's been made often. When you look at Yzerman, do you think it was sort of a conscious decision like, oh, now I'm going to become a two-way guy? Or do you say to yourself, yeah, that's normally when the points drop-off happens for a player and he had no other choice?
I think it's – I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. But I think there are other – like Scott Stevens is another example of a guy who – earlier in his career was putting up 70 points and then, you know, put up a good number of points in his first couple of years with the Devils, but then settled into the role of being more of a defensive rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I know what you're saying. I think what you're sneakily saying is that you don't buy that narrative.
No, I don't. You're right. I don't buy it. All of a sudden, he woke up one day and said, "Damn, Scotty's right. I need to bend my knees on the back jack."
He woke up one day and said, "Damn, I'm beautiful and smarter than everybody in this room."
That's funny. I'm gonna cough, so introduce our guest.
Joining us now on the line. Talk about the Edmonton Oilers and all things National Hockey League. Mark Spector from Sportsnet joins us. Spec, thanks for getting up early, bud. How are you? Hello?
Foiled again by technology.
Oh, Sammy.
False start.
Oh, he's going to
try
again.
Spec, you
there? I'm here.
Oh, there we go,
bud.
Found
you.
How are you?
Boy, are you guys getting it figured out there or what?
We've only been doing this for 7 years. So I don't know why we would figure it out by now, Mark.
Now, Mark, we wanted to have you on, obviously, because we are nearing a momentous occasion in the history of the Edmonton Oilers, the return of Taylor Hall to Edmonton as a member of the New Jersey Devils.
Mm-hmm.
Do they miss him? Do they miss him?
No, they don't miss him. I mean, they don't. You know, I should re-speak. A lot of fans actually really do miss him because he was a good player and a very charismatic guy. And he, in terms of guys you buy tickets to watch play, he's one of those. He kept you on the edge of your seat. So, yeah, a lot of fans really do miss him. They second-guess the Larson trade. But I think in general, you know, anyone feeling sad about the departure of Taylor Hall can just pick up the – take a look at the standings, and you know, they'll probably feel a little bit better about their team.
The thing about the Hall trade to me is I don't necessarily, Mark, look at it. Like, I don't compare Taylor Hall to Adam Larson. I don't. I see this trade as being they got an upgrade on the defense. You know, Taylor Hall is, you know, one of the top left wingers in the game. Did they get one of the top defensemen in the game? No, but they improved their defense. I look at this more as they wanted Taylor Hall's money out, and they wanted to give that to Milan Lucic, and they wanted to give the voice in the room to Connor McDavid. How do you see it?
Some of that is there. You know, Connor McDavid had the voice in the room. Okay, I think that's the first maybe misconception. Taylor Hall at the end of last season said, Connor McDavid's our leader on the ice and off. He's our guy. Everyone knew he would be captain. So I don't think anyone had to clear out of the Oilers room for Connor McDavid to become the, you know, the leader of this team. That's, in my opinion, the first thing. After that, they were asset rich up front with a bunch of speedy wingers. And I think we all know how that worked in Edmonton. And they were asset poor in the back end. You know, frankly, they look like the Toronto Maple Leafs today look a lot like the Oilers two years ago. Toronto needs defense, so Edmonton dearly needed defensemen. I think what was the most astonishing thing to my eyes from that trade, guys, was the value of what it took to get a then 23-year-old right shot, you know, 20-plus minute defenseman in Adam Larson. He's not the greatest player in the world, but he's a real solid 20-minute right-shot defenseman. I didn't think it would take as much as Taylor Hall to get him, but Chiarelli shopped the market for 6 months, and that's what it took to get Adam Larson. And that, to me, was what we learned, the thing we learned the most from that Taylor Hall trade.
So, as we speak, the Oilers have 49 points in 43 games. They're in the third spot in the Pacific Division. A point up on Calgary, 5 points up on Los Angeles, who has two games in hand. They're going to see this thing through? They're going to make the playoffs, Spec?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, put it this way. I think that they should now. They've gone through by far the hardest part of their schedule in November and December. And everyone has this, I get it, but it's worse when you're Edmonton because you're so far away from stuff. So their schedule before Christmas was ridiculous. And the quality of play, frankly, wasn't worth what they charge. But they're through that, and they're still in a pretty good position. And now they've got a couple months of a very reasonable schedule, lots of home games, days off in between those games. So I guess my point is, if they can have 49 points dealing with their first half schedule, there's no reason they can't put another 49 points together in the second half. And now you got 98 points, and that should get you in the playoffs, right?
I want to pick up on the Lucic thing. There's Lucic, and then there's affordable Lucic. Can you explain Patrick Maroon to me, Speck?
Yeah, good question. Well, you know, he's a guy, we've all seen this around sports. Everyone on any team can name a guy who your organization gets at the right time. I want to use, Zach Kassian as an example. You know, doesn't work in Buffalo, doesn't work in Vancouver, obviously huge issues at this point in his life. Goes to Montreal, flames out, says, okay, I got to straighten my life out and be a player. Goes through rehab, comes to Edmonton. Now he's living clean, and he's cheap, and he's a fourth-line right winger, and he's a pretty good player. And the Oilers are just lucky enough to have him at the right moment. Well, Pat Maroon was in Anaheim. He wasn't real serious about it. He didn't eat right. He was carrying 15 extra pounds. The Ducks got tired of him and traded him for almost nothing. And the Oilers are the lucky recipients of a 6'3", 215-pound winger with really good hands who's eating right. He's lost 15 pounds. He's very serious about his profession. You know, the Oilers haven't done much here. They just got the guy at the right time. And there's a good player here when he's focused.
The best part about it from Edmonton's point of view, Speck, Anaheim's still eating half the contract.
For this year and next. So good luck for Edmonton. You know, this is cyclical, guys. Edmonton has been the master of their own bad luck. They've been a brutal organization. They've mismanaged. They've made terrible decisions for 10 years. And now the worm's turning a little bit. Not only are they making smarter decisions, but guess what? They're getting a little good luck, too. And frankly, the Oilers fan probably deserves a little good luck up here, I'd say.
Oh, outside of the draft lottery, where they've had some pretty damn good luck, I'd say.
Well, yeah. What have they done with the draft lottery? They've been a 28th place team every year. I'm not defending the Oilers. I'm saying that the fan up here has been mistreated, okay? And now he's getting some good luck, and God bless the guy. He's a good hockey fan.
I will say this about the Oilers and bad luck. It's bad luck for Cam Talbot to be playing in an era where the National Hockey League All-Star Game is no longer about merit, because that dude deserved to be an All-Star this year. He has been so good for them in the games I've seen, in the games I've followed, to make up for whatever defensive deficiencies they've had. It just sucks that he can't play with the All-Star Game this year.
I kind of wonder about this All-Star Game, guys. Maybe we should have this conversation. Like, does the league phone the GMs and talk about which of their players should go? Isn't that what happens?
I don't know.
In theory, I mean, you have to imagine that they're very lenient. I mean, obviously, Jágr, we know already, is like, hey, I'll come out to your top 100 party, but I'm not playing your game. And they're like, that's fine. I'm sure there are some players that can beg out beforehand, sure.
I think that I heard a story where the league needed a Vancouver Canuck and phoned Jim Benning and said, who's your best guy? What do you think? And it ends up, is it not Bo Horvat out of Vancouver, I believe, and very deserving as a young guy. Mm-hmm. But I guess my question is this. If someone phones up Peter Chiarelli, the GM in Edmonton, and says, what about your goalie, who is leading the league in minutes, leading the league in saves, leading the league in shots, is the busiest guy in the league, right? What do you think Pete Chiarelli is going to say? Pete Chiarelli is going to say, give my guy 4 days off. He's not going to the All-Star game. So, I don't even know, frankly, if Talbot wants to go. He's got brand new twins at home. He may want the day off, too. You know, but he's certainly deserving. And if you want to talk about figuring out why the Oilers are a lot better now, you might as well start with him. He's the best goaler they've had since Dwayne Roloson by a country mile.
But are we ready to say he's amongst the elite in the NHL? I mean, his save percentage is .917. Sure, he's seeing a high volume of rubber. I get that. But at the end of it, I mean, the save percentage is a save percentage. I mean, .915 is the barrier to entry for the playoffs. That's what it seems. He's just a shade above that at .917. Are we ready to say that that's an all-star number?
No, all-star is based on the half a season of hockey, frankly. So is he an all-star this year? In my mind, he could be an all-star this year. Is he, one of the elite goalies in hockey, Jeff? No, not yet. But I'll tell you this. Like, I did the math on this the other day. In his career minutes, this is how little he's played. He played behind Lundqvist. We all know that. He's going to play 40% of his career minutes this season if he stays on this pace. So he hasn't played enough to be an elite goalie. Put a better team in front of him. give him another season or two of being as good as he is right now, and let's have that conversation again. But right now, the team in front of him isn't good enough for him to have much better than a 915.
I wanted to kick it over to the other team in Alberta real quick. I have to admit that I did not think the Flames would still be in a wild card spot, yet here we are. What do you think about the Flames' chances for crossing the finish line and actually making the playoffs this year?
Funny, hey, I thought that Edmonton, Calgary, and Winnipeg out here in my neck of the woods, I figured one of them can make the playoffs. And now I'm starting, now Nashville's falling off, and and some of the teams that we thought were better, LA hasn't been as good. And, give Calgary credit. I saw the stat last night. Since December 13th, I think only Columbus has more wins than they do in the entire league. So, they had a lousy start. They struggled with their goaltending. They had an injured Johnny Gaudreau. Monahan hadn't done much. And they're hanging in. They're playing well. They're better than I thought they were. So, again, the question, it's all about staying power. Can they keep this? Can Matt Tkachuk be as effective in the second half as he was in the first? If he does, they got a shot, because this kid's he's a pain in the butt, this guy. Holy cow, he's hard to play against.
You know what? That whole line has, with Backlund and Frolik, that whole line has been outstanding for Calgary. The pairing of Mark Giordano and Dougie Hamilton has been fantastic as well. And when they're out as five players together, good luck.
Yeah.
That's Stanley Cup quality. It is.
Dougie Hamilton was awful for the first month and a half. And then they put him with Giordano and he turned his game around. Good for him. So, Calgary, not many people picked Calgary for the playoffs. Almost no one picked Edmonton for the playoffs, but if they both made it, it'd be good news up here, because it's been a long time since we've had any playoff hockey in Alberta, boys.
Meanwhile, in Ontario, Ottawa has a playoff spot. The Maple Leafs are chasing one. I can't remember the last time the Battle of Alberta and Ontario both had bite to it, Spec.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. The next two Saturday nights on Hockey Night in Canada is Oilers and Flames, and they'll be really good games. So it's good. Listen, what did we have last year? 17s out of the playoffs. So I think us that work for Sportsnet are mildly happy that that's turning around.
Thank heavens. I know. With mortgages and children and
more
Canadian teams in the playoffs, please.
Hey, Spec, before you hopped on, we were talking about the top 100 list coming out in a couple weeks from the NHL, the rest of the players. What are your expectations as far as weighing the modern era versus the bygone eras? Like, how would you handle that if you were the man running this list? How would you weigh this era versus previous eras?
In hockey, to me, it's going to have to be far more subjective. Let's start with the fact that our statistical analysis compared to baseball is inferior. We don't have the handle on it that baseball has in terms of comparing Ty Cobb to Pete Rose to, today to Edwin Encarnacion, right? And I think baseball people will argue how much you can make, how much it really means, but at least they have better numbers. How do you compare Newsy Lalonde to, to Bob Pulford, to Bobby Orr, to Justin Schultz? Like, how do you make these? I don't know. I can barely compare, guys, a player from today's era, a goalie in today's era, to a goalie in Wayne Gretzky's era. Right? What's 100 points now equals like 160 when Gretz played.
Yeah.
So it's the goaltending has completely changed. Nobody blocked shots when we were growing up. There was like one or two guys on each team that might have blocked shots. Everybody else got the heck out of the way.
Well, goaltender was making butterfly saves.
Yeah.
Outside of Glenn Hall, everyone's using the inside part of their skate.
To me, that's the biggest key right here, is like, how do you evaluate the goaltenders versus their previous incarnations? And how do you evaluate today's scorers vis-a-vis how great the goaltending is? Not only equipment, but technique and everything else. It's a really impossible task. I mean, to try to compare errors when you factor in how good the defense has gotten in this game.
Okay, so let's throw this one out there just for fun, since I'm sitting here in Edmonton. The game, we'd all agree, I think, that the today's average NHL skater is the fastest skater in the history of the league. Is that fair?
Correct. 100%.
This is the fastest time of hockey.
Yes.
Connor McDavid is the fastest player in the league. And in my short window, in my short window of watching hockey, 25, 30 years, I can't ever remember seeing a player, and I'm going back to Tamu and Mike Modano and Paul Kariya, who consistently blows past fast players the way Connor McDavid is. To me, the separation between him and the rest of the league speed-wise, I've not seen before. That's just me. Maybe you guys will argue that.
The only one player that comes close to me is Pavel Bure.
Yeah.
As far as separating away from other players. But that might be the only one that I've seen, Mark.
Okay. So assuming Pavel's in your top 100, I think he, hopefully, I don't know if he is or not, but Connor McDavid can't be in the top 100 because he's only played two seasons.
Right.
But
if
he's among the top two fastest players ever to play in the game, and I think he's got lots of skill, does he merit consideration?
It's funny because, yeah, you always sit on the shoulders of those that came before, and the game is more highly skilled, more competitive than it has ever been. The only thing where I find that it falls down a little bit, the game today, is it's not as creative. Like this is the weird spot that we're at with hockey right now. The game is played right now with athletes whose skill level is at such an elevated clip that it boggles the mind of what these guys can do. But it's at its least creative. Everyone sort of has, you know, their lane, their role, their route, and you do it, and then you go off.
Right.
And I think that's kind of one of the failings of the game right now.
Well, sure. There's three things for me. Overcoaching, there's no question. Completely overcoached to within an inch of its life. The second thing is everybody's in great shape and skates fast. So even the slowest guys will wait faster. But for me, guys, Jeff, when we grew up watching hockey, they didn't take 45-second shifts, right?
2 minutes.
They took minute and a half, 2 minute shifts.
Yep.
Where did all the mistakes happen? Mistakes equal goals. Mistakes happen at the end of your shift. No one goes off the ice. Like, guys are going off the ice with still half tank these days. In the old days, they played 30 seconds, dead tired.
Yeah.
And that's when mistakes and goals and breakaways and screw-ups happen. That whole element of the end of your shift doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. That's why Brett Hull was the most entertaining player of all time, because he could score goals and he would also stay out there for 4 minutes and get gassed and,
right,
and hurt his
right.
team's defense.
Right. Absolutely.
But that's just it. Fatigue has left the game. Like, when have you seen a player, just a regular season, you know, it's a Tuesday night in Minnesota, when have you seen a player exhausted after a game? It doesn't happen.
Okay,
it doesn't
happen.
They're sore, they're in pain, but they're not exhausted.
How does a guy end up in the intermission walk-off interview uncontrollably breathing so hard that he can barely talk? How does that happen? Like, is he faking it? Is this a player thing that they do to laugh with each other?
Well, they do grab them quick, and they tape them, like, as soon as they come off so they can get in the room.
I know, but is that guy always, did he just play a shift? And is he really that tired? I think there's a big scam going on here. We got to figure this out.
It's always the most exhausted guy, and it's always the guy whose sweat is ready to drip off his nose, but it hasn't dripped off quite yet. So you're watching the interview, and you're waiting for it to fall because it's going to be disgusting. No, that's I would also, as an addendum to what you guys are talking about, say we also have four good lines on most of these teams now. There's no more fourth line you throw out for 5 minutes a night that gets completely victimized every time it's on the ice. They're rolling four lines. Everybody's taking short shifts. They're all in great condition. And you're right. It's as Jeff Merrick is wont to say, that you need mistakes in hockey to have great offense in hockey.
Big mistakes, right? You need big mistakes that lead to transition, lead to opportunities. And this is part of the lure of the junior game in a lot of ways for a lot of people. I mean, in the NHL, how many big mistakes do we see a game? Four? You know, Winnipeg last night, we saw a bundle, and it was a 7-4 final. But in the junior game, you get about 30, right? And it's still a high quality of play, but you get big mistakes, big brain cramps, and big turnovers, and it's exciting as heck.
Yep.
Doesn't happen in the NHL. Very few mistakes.
It's going to be fun, this list. I don't think it's going to be easy for them to delete some of the older names that have made these lists in previous years. But I think it's going to be fun to see exactly how many modern guys they put on. Because at the end of the day, I mean, doesn't it behoove the NHL to try to get as many guys that are in the league currently on that list as a promotional vehicle?
But sure, but then let's not, you know, yeah. Like, you could put Cy Denehy on that list, but you're going to have a hard time getting him to come out the presser. you know, I don't know. But the integrity of the list commands that you pick the 100 best players. I guess there won't, you know, the problem's going to be if you leave Malkin off, you're going to get a whole bunch of people up in arms. If you leave, you know, some guy from the 26 Bruins off, no one's going to really complain much.
If you leave Cy Denehy off the list, and that's fine, he probably will be left off the list, I don't want to hear about how Hull and Makita and maybe Bathgate had the first curved sticks because it was Cy Denehy. That's my only thing. If you're going to leave Cy Denehy off, that's cool, but outside of him, there was nobody else who was the first to use a curved stick.
I worry about Merrick, to be honest with you, Jack. I worry about because they're going to leave off some guy.
Where's Lord
Shabbat,
damn it?
They're going to leave off Dit Clapper, and I'm going to have to hear for the next year how nobody respects Dit Clapper, and we all need to remember Dit Clapper.
Yeah, it's if there's not a guy named Dit or Buster or something like that on this list, they haven't worked hard enough.
All right, Speck, thank you so much for your time. You've been awfully generous with it this morning, and we'll catch up with you probably during the Oilers Cup run.
Yeah, absolutely. Or the I'm just heading out now to the Welcome Home Taylor Parade. It's like minus 27 here in Edmonton, so I hope he brings a toque.
Bundle up.
Thanks, boys.
Take care, Speck. Mark Spector. Yeah, the Taylor Hall thing, I feel horrible for Taylor.
Judge him on Lucic. Don't judge him on Larson. Would you make that deal?
But listen, he's a better player than both those guys. My problem, my sadness for him is what he expressed in his initial interviews after the trade, which is that he had been a good soldier and done his best. And much like Stamkos and much like Tavares over the next couple of years, wanted to see it through, wanted to see this thing through, wanted to be there when the worm turned and all of a sudden this team became a contender and he doesn't get the chance. And now he's on a Devils team that is probably going to be where Edmonton was 2 years ago. I mean, it's just like, I don't even know what the hell the Devils are going to do.
Rebuild again. I know. Go through it one more time.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about the Devils is that, like, there are pieces there. Zach has not been good this year. That's kind of disturbing.
He's still young.
I know. There's some pieces there, but they need something. They need something to kind of, I mean, Schneider's great.
Not having a great year, though.
No. He's having a terrible year. There's some guys, like I just mentioned Tavares. I wrote about him yesterday on Puck Daddy. He's having an awful year.
Yeah. Oh, completely.
Kopitar's having an awful year.
Taking away players around him, like an Agatha Christie novel. Every time he turns around, he's like, oh, now this guy's gone too? That guy's gone? Where'd all my players go?
Jonathan Toews All-Star is having an awful year.
Yep. Terrible. Even to his point, like getting named to the All-Star team, he's like, do I belong here? Really?
Philosophically, do you prefer the most entertaining All-Star game, or do you prefer the All-Star game based on merit?
Oh, that's a great question.
Because we've had both incarnations during our lifetimes, and yeah. I think you know, part of the problem we dealt with last year in our All Star Fun was a lot of people hanging on to the idea that it should be still based on merit.
I know. Oh, God, I still come down to it should be fun if you're watching it on television, but if you are a kid, and All Star games are for kids. There's something cool about seeing all of these superstars all in one spot at that rink. So I think it's different depending on who you are and where you're watching it.
Yeah, but the thing I always mention as far as like what my favorite, up until last year, my favorite All-Star moment, my favorite All-Star thing was when I covered it and Scott Hartnell made it that one year. And to see
In Ottawa.
Yeah, to see that game through his eyes, to see his unbridled enthusiasm for being there, to see him soak it up, was really great. And the reason it was great is
to see him chirp FNUF.
Yeah, chirping FNUF. The reason it was great is because it was also a guy who felt like he had earned it. You know, it wasn't simply like a fan selection. It wasn't anything of that nature. His performance that season and in the previous season earned him that spot. And so that's like one tick in the merit column. But ultimately, I kind of agree with you. Like, you know, growing up a baseball fan, there were years when the fans would vote in Ozzie Smith to the All-Star game, the Cardinal shortstop. And, like, he'd be hitting, like, 211. But he's also the guy that does backflips.
But he's
going to
do a backflip over second base.
Exactly.
Come on, bud.
So you take the good, you take the bad. I mean, you might not get a guy who's going to hit the ball all that well, and maybe he doesn't deserve to be there, but damn it, he's going to do a backflip, and that's great.
Yeah, and everyone's going to go crazy. Everyone's going to love it.
But at the same time, I also feel bad for, like, you know, the people making the argument that, hey, Cam Atkinson's been hacking away at this for a few years now. He's an all-star this year. He doesn't get to go because there's two other guys from his team on that squad. So, yeah, whatever. 3-on-3 is great. They got all the stars in the game. It'll be a fun time. It's L.A.
No one's going to yell at us this year. It's some peace and quiet around the all-star game.
It's the NHL getting yelled at for putting Taves on the team. They're the ones they're the ones taking the grief finally.
Yep.
Hey, Sammy, why don't you dial up Kyle if you get a chance? Hopefully that email I sent you went through. Since we last spoke, nothing too major's happened in the league as far as shifts. The CBJ kind of slowing down the pace a little bit. Capitals putting the pedal down, 7 wins in a row. CBJ still 12 points up from the final wild card spot, so they'll be fine.
Do you like them to win a round in the playoffs? Do you like them to win a round in the playoffs?
Depends on the matchup.
Depends how many power plays they get. Yes.
Oh God, don't say that, because then there ain't gonna win a round.
Because they're gonna win a round then.
But dude, like you always say about when the brave young men from the United States beat Canada in international competition, the single best thing that could happen in the playoffs would be the Blue Jackets knocking off the Penguins.
Oh, opening round. Stanley
right?
Cup champions. Take them out. Yeah.
That would be the single best thing to happen. And then that would, of course, clear the way for your Washington Capitals to make their cup run.
Man, I want Ovechkin to win that cup more than anything else. Like, I want, there's a few players that I want, right? You want Thornton still in San Jose.
Yeah.
And you want Ovechkin. And this is probably his last shot. Well, I shouldn't say that. It looks like the last shot this year.
Now that he's a graybeard, and now that he's in his 30s, now we all can come back and appreciate him. I don't know where everybody's been for the last 10 years. This guy's being one of the greatest goal scorers in the history of the
sport. Scoring goals every year. I'm that guy. Still focusing on that.
But Ovi doesn't backcheck. You idiots. That's why nobody wants to play in this dumb league, because of people always harping on him. Elite talents and getting harped on. Why? Because he's Russian?
Put it this way. If you create 15 scoring opportunities but cost your team 5, I'll take that any day of the week, because that's how you win Stanley Cups.
If his name was Gord O apostrophe Vechkin, you'd be calling him Gretzky.
Gord Ovechkin. Gord, son of Vechkin.
Vechkin son. Joining us down the line is a dedicated MVSW listener named Kyle Wilkins. Kyle, welcome to the show.
What's going on, guys? How are you?
Kyle?
So I walked into the Yahoo office here in Manhattan after New Year's for the first time, and there's this giant package in my pants. No, on my desk.
Whoa.
And I open it up, and, like, I see these jerseys, and Kyle Wilkins sends me and Jeffy a present, which are something that was a clear hole in my jersey collection and Jeff's as well. John Scott All-Star Game jerseys. And Kyle just sent it because apparently this god-awful show means something to him. So thank
and apparently,
you, Kyle.
And apparently Kyle has a tree in the backyard that sprouts money. So
if you could send
a couple of those seeds this way, Kyle, that would be great.
I'll be honest with you. It went a little cheap on you boys at the end of the day, but no, I was happy to get them. I was happy to get them for you.
No, you're the best. It was a very, very sweet gesture, and I was reading. I have to send off Jeffy's. I haven't done it yet, but I'll send off Jeffy's ASAP through the postal service here. But I was reading your note, and you and I, so we met before, we met in Minnesota, right? Before around the All-Star game, or around the draft, was it? Or what was it? It was the draft, right?
It was the draft. It was the draft. And actually, believe it or not, so my buddy, Andrew and I were on our way up. We were driving from Fort Wayne, Indiana. We drove up to Minnesota for the draft, and we're listening to the podcast, and, you know, we're talking there, and we're like, man, it'd be really cool if we meet Wish. And my buddy is...
Oh, what a treat.
I know. The expectations in life,
wow.
Right?
Wow. Set your bar. Talk about setting your bar low.
He is absolutely terrible about placing faces, but his dad actually ended up driving us up because his dad is from the area, wanted to go see some family up there, so he said he'd drive us up. Lets us out at the door and everything. We're starting to walk in. I look over, and that looked like the guy with the cigar in his mouth walking in on the phone. So I yelled Wish twice and got his attention. We took a picture and everything. And the funny thing is he had to profusely apologize because he was actually on the line, I believe with Ottawa, calling into a radio at the time, you know, and doing an interview. But he was nice enough to pause that for a minute to take a picture with us.
I remember that distinctly because we met outside the arena, and it should go to show you that it meant something to me because I have like a god awful memory as far as like meeting people. But I remember that meeting very distinctly. It's probably the only, like, there's only three things I remember from that draft: meeting you, eating the Juicy Lucy that squirted grease on my sleeve,
oh my,
and then also all the Winnipeg fans that were at the draft. Celebrating the return of the Jets. That was another thing.
Well,
I remember
from
that draft.
They announced the name that draft as well.
Right. Yep, exactly. So, no, it was awesome. I remember that meeting. And, like, so this was
so
really
hang on
sweet,
a second.
Man.
Hang on a second. Yeah. So, essentially, Kyle, when you first met Wish, he big-timed you. Hey, yeah, nice to meet you, but I'm on the radio right now.
Well, I mean, like... Merrick, in fairness, I was on the radio in Ottawa. It's not like I was like saying, "Hey, I'm doing Jim Rome's show right now. I can't talk to you."
Okay. Very good. Carry on, gentlemen.
Yeah, he big timed us, but you know, at the end of the day, it was all right. It was all right.
So what prompted you to send the John Scott jerseys in particular?
You know, I mean, at the end of the day, it was. You guys had such a big impact on getting this guy there. And I mean, at the end of the day, the whole hockey world really embraced the addition to him and into the All-Star game. And it was a really big event for a lot of folks. And listen to the silly podcast as much as I do. I mean, I figured, hey, at the very least I could throw a couple jerseys your way for all the time that you've given, you know, me and everybody else that's been listening from the start.
So if you enjoyed the All-Star game, send Kyle some cash to offset the price of these jerseys. Because that dopey podcast got John Scott into the ASG last year.
Kyle, who's your team? Who's your team of choice?
So I'm a St. Louis Blues fan. So I was actually working out in St. Charles, Missouri for the now-defunct St. Charles Chill of the Central Hockey League all of one season. They were in existence. Being from Fort Wayne, Indiana, I'm not really close to a whole lot of NHL teams. So being able to get out there to 7-8 games through the season, plus with Vladdy in one of his first years lighting it up, I became pretty partial to him.
So what do you think? Do you think they got something going on this year, or do you think the window's closed?
You know what? You never know with Hitch making his. We'll see if it's his last push, huh? But you know what? The Central's tough this year, man. The Central's real tough. So they're gonna have a hard grind. But you know what? Once they get in, they finally got past the first round last year. I think. Yeah, you never know. You never know what could happen once they actually get there.
Well, Parayko finally scored, so that's helpful. I mean, he was firing everything at the net, and he finally got one in. Hopefully that breaks the logjam for him.
Since we have you, I mean, we don't have a game show prepared for you, but I'll ask you a trivia question anyway.
Sure.
We all remember that Nicholas Lindberg was the leading scorer for the 2013-14 St. Charles Chill. Who was the second highest leading scorer that season for the Chill, their only season in the CHL?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
I'll give you a hint.
Quick, to the Google.
No, go ahead.
Would that be Jordan Fox?
Jordan Fox finished the season with 30 points in 45 games, but the name that you were looking for, of course, was Kyle O'Kane, 36 points in 62 games.
Now, actually, Kyle and I actually developed a pretty close, you know, relatively close friendship because
both
my dad, yeah, well, of course, but
there's that.
My dad refereed Kyle in the CCHA for several years, so he knew of my dad through that. So Kyle was out at playing for Western Michigan, and he's like, "Oh, you're Wilkie's kid." So yeah, we kind of hit it off there. So yeah, that doesn't surprise me that he lit it up.
Hey, I'm just looking at that roster too. Martin Hlinka, is that any relation to Ivan?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure. He was one of our few Europeans on the squad. He was kind of an older guy as well. So you know what?
36, yeah.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah, 36 yeah. years old when he played for you guys.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Kyle, you're the best. Your gift is,
thanks,
is ridiculously generous, and Jeffy and I are very honored that you took the time to send stuff and to write sweet things to us, and we are honored that we, in some small way, have been able to entertain you, probably not inform you, but entertain you over these years.
Wait a minute. Hey, Jamie Rivers was – hang on. Jamie Rivers was the coach of that team?
He was.
Shit. Here we go.
Yes,
sir. It's one of the best junior defensemen I saw. He was a real good D-man with Sudbury. Wow. Jamie Rivers was your coach.
Do you know that story behind him and him playing over and overseas?
No, hit me.
So look this up because I'm going to do a poor job telling this story and everything. But Jamie was on the ice, and forgive me, it was either a practice or a game. Something happened where he was overseas after he was done playing for the Blues, right? Something happened on the ice, and something medically happened. I don't know if it was cardiac or what it was, but they rushed him to the hospital, surgery, whoa, all the works and everything, while they're trying to call up his wife. He ends up legally dying there through surgery.
Wow.
He woke up.
What?
Several minutes later in a body bag, believe it or not. And he ended up living, and that was the end of his career. He was only over in Russia for a few games, a handful of games, and that incident happened, and that's when he went behind the bench, so to speak. So
hang on a second. There's
story.
At Slapshot Diaries, there's, as told to our buddy Joe Pack, there's the story of Jamie Rivers, a death certificate. Oh, this is glorious. Whoa.
He woke up in a body bag?
He did. Oh,
it's like an Undertaker match.
Do we know he's not a vampire?
Zombie?
Hey, you know what? With the way some of those chill games went, it wouldn't surprise me.
All right.
One Kyle.
Oh, my God.
Thank you. Thank you for that story as well.
Story time with Uncle Kyle. This is great.
Hey,
Kyle, you're the best. Thank you so
much. By the way.
Oh, go ahead. What?
Hey. I'm sorry. Real quick. Hey, are you going to be in Windsor for the Memorial Cup?
I am. Yeah, I'll be there for the full 2 weeks. Yeah.
Oh, you mean Jeff.
Yeah, Greg, you covered the Memorial Cup this year?
Yeah, right. My buddy Andrew and I plopped down tickets for the package. So
hoping
to cross paths.
We will. By all means. Yeah, well, we follow each other on Twitter, so just hit me up on DM.
Will do.
Awesome. Thanks, Kyle.
All right, boys. Thanks a lot.
Kyle Wilkins.
Some stories.
Making it happen.
About dead defensemen in the KHL.
Two things before we go.
I got a conference call. I got to punt like ASAP.
Two things real quick.
Go.
In our discussion of fastest skaters of all time, Mike Gartner, honestly, like is a name that probably needs to be in that mix. But we don't want to put it in the mix because nobody has respect for him as a player.
Just love volume shooting. Here, and I kind of pause when, God, listen, no one's faster than Connor McDavid with the puck in the NHL. But who do you think on a straight line is faster, him or Andreas Athanasiou?
Athanasiou might be the fastest player right now.
He's freaking fast. He's not doing it with the puck like Connor is.
But Grabner needs to be in that conversation. Cagliano still needs to be in that conversation.
Yep. Yep, these are all Dylan just, Larkin's got to be in that conversation.
But the thing about Connor is and the example that you gave was a great one, was the thing with about Bure, which is that when they're that fast with the puck, they seem like they're going 10 speeds faster than they actually are.
It's craziness.
All right. You got to go, so we don't have time. Thanks for mailbag stuff, people. But we'll get to it next time. We went a little long with Kyle, but that's because we had to learn about the story about the dude who died and woke up in a body bag.
That's the best story of the podcast right at the very end. Just because I noticed that Jamie Rivers was the coach, we get like the best story of the podcast. I love hockey. Oh, my God. Body bag Jamie Rivers.
Thank you to Kyle Wilkins. Thank you to Mark Spector. Thank you to everybody for listening. And we'll catch you guys next week.
Thanks.
Bye.
Kyle. Thank you.